The word why, what a curious word. The kind of word that can make us cringe, feel defensive, or even distant. But you know, sometimes why is the key. The key that can unlock so much to our lives. Join me as we explore the why with fascinating contributors to the world, those that entertain us, inform us, teach us about life, and if we're lucky, inspire the next in all of us. I'm your host, Dr. Rod Berger, and welcome to Headroom, a production of Rainlight and co-produced by Old Soul. Let's go.
All right, let's take a deep dive today. I really want to understand sort of how we are supporting. A lot of times we'll talk about supporting students and students of a certain age or traditional age bracket, but we're all students in life. And I think that we find where we're working, where we're spending the majority of our time, how are we learning, how are we supporting one another, and sort of advancing in our capabilities, especially interpersonally. And so I want to spend some time with Jennifer Dolsky. She's the CEO and founder of Rising Team, a SaaS platform that equips managers with the tools and training to build engaged, connected, and successful teams. She has a wide range of executive experience and leadership roles at technology companies, including some of these I think you've probably heard, Facebook, Google, Change.org, and Yahoo. What an incredible background. As a thought leader, she's written about leadership and the future of work for LinkedIn influencers. She teaches management as a lecturer at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, and her first book, Purposeful, about how each of us can be movement starters, was published by Penguin Portfolio in 2018 as a Wall Street Journal bestseller. I've seen you on Good Morning America, Jennifer. You've done the press junket. You're very good. I think it's mainly not just because I think you're an incredibly likable person, but because you're talking about things that are really important to people. In the way in which we think about our companies and how we think about our teams. Let's sort of go backwards, if you don't mind, in your background. Talk about where some of these things sort of were born in you to think about impact other people outside of yourself. Because I think that's sort of this, I don't know if it's a dying skill set or one that we need to sort of rebirth, which is understanding our own footprint in the presence of others and the way in which we impact them positively, negatively, and maybe indifferently. And I think in your background, you've done a really nice job of understanding these, especially when we think about technology. So give me a little background on where your advocacy for team started.
Sure. So interestingly, I started my career in a way that's pretty atypical for most tech executives, which is I was a high school teacher. I started a nonprofit right out of college to help students become first-gen college graduates. And for me, my purpose in life has always been about creating positive impact for others. I have always felt like my own legacy would only be amplified the more people I could help achieve what they were trying to achieve. And the reason I started as a nonprofit and a teacher is because I felt like I could do that kind of in a hands-on, deep way with individuals. And for sure, that was true. You know, I still have people who were students in my classes come up and say, I chose my career because of this. Or, you know, I had parents of the kids who went to college say, you know, it's a sink or swim world and you taught my son how to swim and things like that, which was very meaningful. The reason I got into tech is because I wanted to see if there were ways to do that at scale. So when you run a nonprofit, you can raise twice the money and you serve maybe twice the students. And that was compelling, but I thought there's got to be a way to do this in a more exponential way. And that's what took me to a career in tech. And you mentioned some of the companies, but the ability to serve millions and then billions of people in a way that could impact them was really meaningful to me.
Tell me about your relationship with technology, because I think you and I occupy an interesting generation where I think people think we're supposed to have the answers maybe, or the younger generation thinks we're supposed to have it. Yet, you know, we were the beta testers, whether we knew it or not.
Yes.
And tell me about that sort of first piece of technology, or when did you feel like you were comfortable with technology? Because I always see people like at the soccer field, like, are they comfortable with it? Do they want to talk about it? Can they utilize it? And it sort of runs the gamut.
So true. And you are right. This is going to age me a bit, but I first got introduced because I was working in a school. And at the time, schools were the first places to be, quote, wired for the internet, back when you needed wires for the internet. And I thought, this is really interesting. I had a woman on my board at the time, and I said, you know, I have access to this thing called the internet. I don't know what it is. And she wrote for me on a post-it note. She said, there's two guys at Stanford that have started this site that helps people navigate the internet. And she wrote it for me, www.yahoo.com, stuck it to my computer on a post-it note. And that changed everything for me. Because once I got access to Yahoo, I thought, this is incredible. This is going to change the world. I immediately went and said, I have to work at this place, which I did. And I spent almost 10 years there. And yeah, we've seen so many massive changes in technology. I actually found in my basement, I was looking through my old stuff and I found a digital camera, like one of the first digital cameras. It says holds 20 photos. Like, can you believe that? So yeah, we've seen all of this. And the amazing thing is how exciting the changes still are that are happening. And I will say the generative AI explosion that's happened over the past year has been the single most exciting tech change that I've seen in my whole career, even having seen all of that.
And I'm going to put a pin in that because I'm with you and absolutely would be remiss if we didn't talk about generative AI. Let's talk about, I love this notion that you're an educator, you get the post-it, right? And then you say, I need to work there. Now, is this out of just sheer proximity that you had access to these companies with where you live? Or was it something sort of in the family gene pool that said, if you dream it, you can do it kind of a thing? Like, were you always like this as a little girl? If you thought you could do something, you just dove in, or were you cautious? Yeah.
I think it was a little bit of both. So it is true. I grew up in San Francisco. So I grew up amidst a sea of innovators. And I had two working parents, which has its both pros and cons, but certainly I had a working mom who went to business school at night with two kids, changed careers, and a dad who really had two daughters and then three daughters and said, you can do anything. So I had a lot of that, what Ben Rattray, the founder of Change.org, used to call love privilege, which is like not just the birth lottery, but also people who believed in me. And then though, when I was working at the school, I actually was working in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So I wasn't back in the Valley. I didn't have the proximity, but I did have that belief in myself. And you can tell because I went to Pittsburgh in the first place to found this nonprofit, even though I had never been to that city, never stepped foot there once in my life. And I said, I'm going to start this thing. And I found a head of school who wanted to, you know, host it at his school. And I said, yeah, I can do that. I was 21 years old. I raised $1 million for that nonprofit. I started it. He said, why don't you take 2 years to start this thing? And I said, I know I can start it in a year. And if you make me take 2 years, I'm going to go somewhere else. And that's kind of just always been inside. I've kind of been founder from the beginning, I think.
What's the dark side of that level of gumption? I mean, I think we celebrate that, right? But at what point do you find yourself bumping up against, whether it's skills you haven't had access to or been sort of in front of or learned, where you kind of say, wow, this is what it commands of me right now, but I haven't really had the experience. Help me understand, how do you navigate that? Is it bumper bowling, or do you find that you can go into the gutter there as you're bowling and creating something?
Yeah, this is a really good question. And to be honest, no one has ever asked me this question before. So I get asked a lot of the same questions. So what I would say here are two things. One is, you know, everybody has natural talents, the things that just come easily to you and that you are born with. If I asked your parents or your childhood friends, what were you like as a kid? This is how they would describe you. I believe my top natural talent is I am a fast learner of new things. And so as it turns out, all the time, every single time I have started a new job, there have been a ton of things I did not know how to do. And that is my happy place. I kind of jump in and learn new categories and learn new skills. You know, I started as a teacher. I went into the internet. I took over the autos business at Yahoo. I didn't know anything about cars. And so that part came easily. The dark side, as you put it, is that it is a constant. It's always inside me, and it's very hard to turn off. And so people who know me well know that most weekends I work, as an example. I don't expect my team to work on the weekends. I don't ask them to, but I do, because it's like always churning inside me, and it's hard to turn it off.
What's the impact on evaluating talent then, if that's the platform by which you live?
Yeah.
How do you understand sort of complementary skills? How do you think about the impact that you might have on, and I want to talk about being a woman, a female in tech, because I just think it's important for young girls to listen to powerful women. But sort of that impact, because I think there are amazing leaders out there that sometimes they're less than, I think, aware of the footprint that they leave behind. And it can either stunt the growth of the next generation or it can inspire and invigorate. But I think it is a fine line and you have to sort of thread a needle. Have you found that to be either a smooth relationship for yourself or one that's been bumpy?
Generally pretty smooth. To be honest, I worry about it more with my children than I do with my team.
Put your mom hat on, right?
Because, you know, with my team, it's pretty easy to say, you know, this is not what I expect of you. And honestly, I also do demonstrate that people should work in their own way at their own schedule. So for instance, I also love to work out, and my favorite workout is Orange Theory, and my favorite time of day to go to class is 4:30. And so I stop working at 4 so that I can get changed and get to Orange Theory and come back. And then I start working again sometimes, and sometimes I don't. So I believe I try to set the right model, saying for me, it feels like I work a couple hours on a Saturday and a Sunday, because that's what I want to do, but I'm not going to work from 4 to 5:30 on any other day. And, you know, don't talk to me then, to try to set up a space where people can do what best suits them. And that's the way we treat talents too. So when I said, you know, I have some natural talents, everybody does. And we actually at Rising Team, we haven't talked about what we do yet, but what we, as you said, we're a SaaS platform. We help leaders run deeply connecting, interactive sessions with their teams where they build deep insights about each other. One of our sessions is about natural talents, and everybody takes a little assessment and then they can overlap their talents with each other. And as an example, you know, I love to get people excited about new ideas. I love to cultivate teams. I hate to plan. I am like horrible at setting timelines and process and so
I'd
forth.
Love to plan, but it's 4:30 and I've got an orange.
Exactly. And you know, there are people though, like I used to work with a woman at change.org who then came with me to Facebook. She is incredible at this, and it is her happy place. And so partnering us together was the best thing for both of us. And we try to help every team on earth find those areas of overlap.
So I preempted that by bringing up the sort of, you know, talking about women in business, but in technology. Help me understand sort of how that has changed over time. I'm hoping, as a father of a very strong 9-year-old and a very successful wife who definitely runs the family, and I celebrate that, I think it's really important to understand where we're doing well in this issue of marginalizing people just in general and not creating or opening up opportunities for people to flourish. And I think tech has gotten a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of bad press over the years about the tech sector and sort of this stranglehold that traditional roles have seen. And I'd just love to hear sort of your perspective on where we are and where we can continue to improve. Because I don't subscribe to this notion that we can just sort of check a box and say that, well, we figured it out. No, I just don't think humans are like that.
That's definitely true. And I would say we are making progress. That is a good thing. It is true that while talent may be equally distributed, opportunity is not. And that is still the case, not only on a gender basis, but race, class, geography, pretty much every way you look at it, there are really talented people who don't yet have the same opportunities. That is starting to shift a little bit in the workplace around this movement of skills-based hiring. So rather than experience and degrees, we're going to hire people based on their skills and talents. In terms of being a woman in tech, yes, when I first started, that was much, much more rare. And certainly in some categories, I mentioned I used to run Yahoo Autos. I would go to the JD Power conferences, and I would be, you know, the only woman in tech there and the only woman in automotive. So I got a double whammy sometimes. But I've seen a lot of progress, and I will say that as an operator in technology, I have always felt like I was at least able to make opportunities, see a path forward, and I've had a very successful career. What I will say is still tough. I mean, there's still challenges all around tech, but in particular, female founders are, as I believe you know, only receive 2% of all venture funding. So it is still hard.
I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is still.
What about the women? One area, Jennifer, that I've been fascinated for years is when we see sort of behind the scenes. So please correct me, but I've read countless books where, in essence, once a woman has achieved a certain level of success, there's a choice to either help the next generation of female, right, in their sector or not. And sadly, yeah, I'll hear stories anecdotally where those things don't occur. And I don't know if it's out of a fear of scarcity or these sorts of challenges. And so is the tech sector any different? Are you seeing women empowering other women?
I am. I really do see, for the most part, I'd say the 95-99% of women out there are all about empowering other women. And you can see it in the networks, in the groups. There's, you know, women in product, women in tech, mothers in tech, especially, you know, I ran groups for Facebook. There's so many huge groups of women empowering other women, mentorship programs and so forth. So that part I see widely spreading. There are, you know, a couple examples that I'm sure we all can point to of someone who kind of pushes down someone else to ensure their own success, but I believe they're few and far between.
Headroom is produced by Old Soul, a one-stop marketing agency that understands the power of brand and nuance. Reach out to my guy Matt at Old Soul and supercharge your brand and content strategy. That's Old Soul. Shoot Matt a note at aoldsoul.com. That's aoldsoul.com. And now, back to our guest.
Well, that is very nice to hear. That is very encouraging. Talk about Rising Team. Talk about why Rising Team at the time. What was going on that you felt? Because I think it's easy to sort of say, well, what's the solution? Why the solution, right? But yeah, to me, what is really interesting is sort of the negative space when you look at an image, right? And you say, well, wait a minute, what's yeah, missing here problem that we think we can address given the change in the environment and the variables that we all have to work with now in a post-COVID era?
Yeah. So the interesting thing is I started the vision for Rising Team, and the very early prototype came in the very beginning of 2020 before COVID. And so I'll tell you the original problem I was solving and then what happened to make it even more important. So I came from, remember, 25 years of leading teams in tech, big companies, small companies, you know, scaling change.org around the world. And I always felt, both as a manager of individual teams and then as a leader of hundreds of other managers managing teams, like we didn't have the tools we really needed. So I was lucky. I had multiple executive coaches. I was trained by Fred Kaufman. I have an MBA. And I always describe it like being taught to fish and then going back to the lake with a book on how to fish or like a binder. I literally had binders sitting on my desk. I was like, this is not helpful. What I need is a fishing pole. I need tools to bring to life with my teams the things I'm learning. And I didn't have that. So I had started hacking together those things already, and I saw them spreading inside the companies that where I worked. And so I started prototyping this idea. Then the world turned upside down. So we, if you look 3 years later, we now live in a workplace where 75% of all people work hybrid. So tons of remote work, distributed work. We are in a down economy where so many companies have been through layoffs and union strikes and so forth. We have Gen Z coming into the workplace who has much higher expectations for a sense of belonging and feeling valued. We have a super challenging economy, geopolitical environment, and we have AI where everyone's nervous. Is AI going to take my job? What do I have to do to learn AI? All of this lands on managers. So the problem I thought I had in 2020 is magnified by thousands now of how hard it is for managers. So they desperately need support. Managers are more burned out, more overwhelmed, and quitting at higher rates than ever before.
So paint the picture for me. So how does Rising Team work? So if I'm engaged with it, how do I apply this? I mean, is there, just kind of walk me through the experience so that people understand how it's being disseminated.
Here's how it works. If you think about it, your job as a manager, I describe great managers are a little bit like great sports coaches. Are you a sports fan at all?
There needs to be a step program for me. Like, I'm addicted to sport. That's my happy place.
I also am a big sports fan. I grew up in San Francisco in the 80s, so I am a huge 49ers fan.
I would say so, yeah.
Yes, big year for us. Fingers crossed. And I also was a coxswain on the rowing team in high school and college. And my boat actually won national championship when I was in college. So I really deeply believe that the best leaders are like the best sports coaches. They do three things. They clarify, what does winning look like? Where are we going? What is your role in getting us there? They coach, which means they understand each person on the team, their unique talents, preferences, working styles, needs, and help them reach their individual potential as well as help the team succeed. And then they connect. They make the team feel like a team, support each other, want to be in it together. And Rising Team is about helping make it easy for managers to do all those three things. So the way it works is that we built different kits on different topics. We took all the topics of high performing teams, like psychological safety, appreciation, setting expectations. We made a kit for each one. And the kit has a session that you run with your team in a synchronous way. It can be remote or in person, mobile or laptop. And it walks you through all the things that a facilitator would do, but without needing a facilitator, because you as the manager basically follow the software. It has an icebreaker. It has some learning goals. It has an activity. It pulls your data together. It has reflections and so forth. And so for somewhere between, the sessions run between 10 minutes and 2 hours, depending on which ones you pick. And we recommend that people do at least two or three of these a quarter. So it's not a lot of time. We call it like HIIT for managers, like high intensity interval training. But for somewhere between, 2 hours and 4 hours a quarter, you sit down, you make your team feel like you care about them, you value them, you understand them. It works extremely well. We have all the data to show it moves employee engagement, it moves connection, et cetera. And now what we're building and about to launch this year is an AI coach that sits on top of that data, because you have all the insights, but it's hard to remember them when you're in the day-to-day.
So how is the AI? Okay, so yeah. So yeah. Introduce us to this AI.
Yeah.
What's the response look like? Like?
So basically, imagine we had spent 2 hours together and I was uncovering your user manual, which is like, how do you like to receive feedback? What times of day do you like to work? When is it okay to interrupt you? And then later, I wanted to say, okay, Rod did a really good job on this particular activity. I'd like to, appreciate, recognize him. I'm going to go and ask my AI coach called Artie for Rising Team. Help me with some ideas for how to appreciate Rod based on his personal preferences and, ways he likes to be appreciated. It will give me suggestions that are unique to you that would be different than another person on your team. And then I can say, well, I'd like to write a thank you note, to Rod. Can you help me draft a thank you note? And of course it will. So it has all the power of generative AI in the leadership based, science best practices. And then it adds the insights that are unique to you from your Rising Team sessions. So that's what we believe is kind of the winning combination, deep human connection plus AI.
Sounds like you could also solve marriages. You could save marriages. Not solve, save.
Yes. It's funny. I haven't thought about that. But now
sounds like a fantastic app.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm assuming, this is a softball for sure, but just to clarify, given your work at Stanford and coming from an educator background, are you in your happy place right now because you're able to sort of combine all of these ingredients?
I love it. I love it so much. This is, and sometimes I think people think about their careers and every point along that line is something that's leading you to another place. So I have not regretted any of the choices I've made. I've learned a lot. I've loved them. But this for me is the company I've been meant to build my whole life. And I love the combination actually of spending time at Rising Team, which is the scale piece. How do we get this out to millions and then billions of people? And the time I spend at Stanford, which is the depth piece, where I get to be one-on-one with students in class.
It's like going to the gym for you, isn't it?
Yes, yes, it is. I love it.
You know, one thing I'm hearing from you, so I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the facilitator role in the sort of origination of Rising Team. Because I think that, look, there has been good content out there, but we've all experienced content that is delivered or made available, and that's where it's always fallen short, where it's stale. It's like, who in their right mind would even want to participate in this outside of just checking a box or sending an email that you've completed something? How much did that play into your thinking about how, if I'm a manager and I'm sort of now playing the role as a facilitator with your materials, your kits, talk about that. You know, we talk about buyer personas. I would think that you really have a good handle as a team, you guys do, in understanding just the different sort of voices, perspectives, experiences of managers out there that are going to be really deploying and representing what you've all built.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing, you make a good point here, because most content in the learning world, it's delivered in one of two ways. It's either delivered asynchronously, usually via video or sometimes books, et cetera, but it's flat. You know, there's no synchronous interaction at all. And that's what I call the fishing book problem, right? You learn a lot, but it's such a heavy burden for you to take that and turn it into something for anyone else to use. And it generally doesn't happen. 99% of the time people can't, it's just very hard to implement. The other way content gets implemented is synchronously through live facilitators. And sometimes they're in person, people get together at offsites, sometimes they're virtual cohorts, which are very popular now. And those, as you say, they're kind of hit or miss based on how good the facilitator is. You can have awesome facilitators and people love that stuff. They would do it every day if they could. Companies can't afford to because it's really expensive to bring in those people, especially the good ones. What we've done is say, what if we made every manager, every team lead on earth into a facilitator, and we took away the need for the showmanship of it? Because it's just you and your team. It's just, a lot of it is just about asking the right questions, giving the right prompts so that they have that conversation. And as it turns out, that is the magic formula. It's giving them the tools so they just press go and don't really have to think about it. And you can see it in the scores, because we ask four questions at the end of every session. Do you feel more connected to your team? Did you learn something valuable? Will you work more effectively together? And would you recommend this? And I can tell you that across all the kinds of teams, like engineers at tech companies that have never facilitated anything, I have the Massachusetts State Probation Officers using Rising Team. We have, you know, marketing teams from around the world on six continents. They all are more than 90% agree or strongly agree to all those questions, the people on their teams. So it doesn't matter if you are a great facilitator. What matters is that you take the time to sit with your team and show them you care about them and you want to understand them. That's what makes people score them super high.
Okay, so when you're not in front of your team or you're not being interviewed and you're just sitting there maybe with a nice glass of wine, looking up and thinking about all the applications of what you've been building, where do you see this going? Because when I hear you talk, you mentioned areas that I think are so incredibly important for our education system. I mean, I don't see a sector where this does not apply. And I don't mean sort of the direct application of Rising Team. I mean the concept of understanding the power of inquiry, the power and the language of prompts, because this is the world that we're walking into. It's like I interviewed Hadi Partovi, the founder of Code.org, from your neck of the woods, an incredibly nice individual and a powerful personal story. And he said to me recently, he said, you know what people don't understand? This is the slowest point of innovation we're ever going to be in. Yes. Yet the public thinks that we are on this, you know, accelerated trajectory. And it's like, no,
only getting faster.
It's only getting faster. I don't know
if you've seen the chart for the AI, like, you know, the number of parameters in the models and so forth. It starts in 1950 and it's like, there were 40 petaflops. And now it's like the last 10 years, it's, you know, like twice as fast as Moore's law. So I agree with him completely. It is. Yeah. I also really agree with you. At the end of the day, it is about the combination of our humanity and the technology. The only way people will succeed is to have both. We cannot be a tech-only world because at the end of the day, we're human. And that is exactly why, you know, we didn't customize the Rising Team content to make it work on different continents or different industries, because it's just asking questions about people's humanity and both who they are as people and how they like to work. And that those questions can be the same regardless of whether you work in a manufacturing plant or bank or a retail store. And it is, when you ask where I think it will go or where I want it to go, I say completely, not facetiously, every team on earth. Like, our vision is a world where everybody feels deeply understood, supported, and able to reach their goals. And that's true whether you're a student, whether you are in the workforce, whether you're a parent. And so, yes, we've started actually a version called Rising Team for Schools, but over time, yeah, that's what I want. I want everybody to feel understood and know how to understand each other.
And Jennifer, that's the power, because you're talking about the power of simplicity. It's like one of my favorite books, Daniel Pink, I don't know if it's 2008 or around then, A Whole New Mind, where in essence, the more we develop and we escalate in our technology, the simpler we almost like fold in on ourselves. And to your point, this is where sort of the icebreaker and the experience of Rising Team, I mean, you're understanding the emotional connection that you want to have at a certain level to be able to then engage with your team so that you can all learn collectively. And it's such a subtle point, as opposed to sort of this telling that a lot of us experience, especially in professional learning environments. What a treat to spend some time with you. I find you incredibly likable and transparent. I think that's what we need in leaders, especially in the tech space, because you're really going to be authoring our futures in so many ways. We need to have these supportive mechanisms in place and people who have the legacies to be able to do that, I think, with thoughtfulness and substance. I want to encourage people, you can go to risingteam.com. You'll find Jennifer there. You can check out her Good Morning America interview. How cool is that? As a fan of Good Morning America. Jennifer, I wish you continued success. I look forward to seeing how Rising Team continues to expand its footprint and keep up the great work. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Rod. Can I add one more thing?
Absolutely.
And just because you bring up the point about transparency, and I do want to make sure that people understand, even though I'm at a point where I'm really excited about what I'm doing and I feel like things are amazing, nothing is a line straight up and to the right, right? We all have good days and bad days. And I often compare it to being like climbing a mountain. Just some days are really sunny and I'm like, can see the top, and other days are cloudy and there's a huge storm coming. And I have those days too. So we all have those days. And I think especially for founders and people who are, again, movement starters, it's so important to know you're not alone. Even the people who seem like everything's going great have really hard days and things when it feels like it isn't working. It's about keep climbing up that mountain.
Yeah, the summit can absolutely change in any given moment for sure. Well, keeping you, I love the transparency. And like I said, I think we need more efforts like this at Rising Team. And obviously you guys have been incredibly successful. Again, you can go to risingteam.com. I'm your host, Dr. Rod Berger.
Thanks for taking the plunge into Headroom, where we uncover the why behind the what and who impacting our lives. Headroom is a production of Rainlight and co-produced by our friends at Old Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Rod Berger, and this is Headroom.